At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
I promised Burkhart I would keep you safe, and safe is where I'll keep you. It's a random Treebeard reference for all you Lord of the Rings grim crossover fans, because today we're talking about Tree People, the season 6 episode on AfterBuzz TV's Grim After Show.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
It's the last season. I'm going to keep getting as dumb with these openings as I possibly can. And Yell's not here, I can get extra dumb.
No one's going to stop you.
Yeah. Not that she would. She'd encourage it, if anything.
She'd be like, get out.
But welcome once again to AfterBuzz TV's Grim After Show, everyone. Tree People!
Yep, they're a thing.
The episode. I'm your host, Zach Wilson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson. I've got Tori J. Miller here.
Yep, Tori J. Miller. You can find me at Tori J, TORIJAY. You can also find me here in the chat. I will be reading you. Yep, that's it.
Yael Teagle is at Klexicon this weekend.
Yes.
So she was unable to. She's unable to join us, though I'm sure she has many opinions about the episode. You can tweet her to find out her opinions at Yael Teagle, YAELTYGIEL.
Yeah.
Yes. Got it.
You can also find her at Yael TV, etc.
I like this voice that is like your version of Yael.
Yeah.
That I'm sure she will appreciate when she listens.
Oh, yeah.
To this.
It's going to be great.
Let's start off with the quote. In the morning, glad I see my foe outstretched beneath a tree. It's like super not ominous, so it's like really hard to make. But thank you to Alicia Perez, who sent us the full poem by William Blake on Twitter at BillyJeanGirl18. I was angry with my friend. I told my wrath did end. I was angry with my foe. I told it not. My wrath did grow. And there's a lot more. But the whole bottom of that paragraph, the bottom of the poem is, and into my garden stole when the night had veiled the pole. In the morning, glad I see my foe outstretched beneath a tree. I guess if your foe is outstretched beneath this tree, he's probably dead.
I would imagine so. That's how I thought about it when I read it, was that, like, essentially you're walking up and the person is basically about to be buried beneath that tree.
Yeah.
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 So, yeah. And I think it really fits to today's episode. It really fits today's episode. What with a tree that eats people.
Yeah. That tree does eat people. Kenosha Moby.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure I nailed that one. I didn't copy down the second one. So, Grimaniac, I know you're in the chat with us. Hit us up with what was the actual tree called? Because that's what I forgot to write down.
The tree was called, Grimaniac, but it was the Juboko.
The Juboko tree.
Yes.
Okay.
So, it was the Juboko, and then the Kinshom... yep. Kino Shinombe. Yep.
Kenosha Moby. I did it phonetically in my notes.
Yeah.
So that's what I usually do. It just doesn't always help. the Juboko, according to Germaniac.
Juboko. Look, get out of the chat.
Oh, that's yelling yes. at me. See, Tari is just an avatar for either Dylan and or Yell to utilize at their discretion.
Hey, I'm in here too. This is Dylan. Hey.
Being Tari Miller.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump into this episode. Let's start with the Vessin of the week, even though it's not really a Vessin per se. I don't know. What do you think? Is this a Vessin?
Because
we never see a human form.
Right. I don't think it's a Vessin. It's more of like a nature spirit.
Like closer to the golem.
Right. So, I mean, because like in the...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The old Grimm's journal, like, it doesn't have a human form. They've never seen it vogue. And like in nature, like, it has that symbiotic relationship, which isn't something that, like, is found in most Vessin. As a Vessin zoologist, you don't find this in many Vessin.
All right.
Yes.
But yeah, we've had a few of these. So I like that they're going into that again. Like, as much as I want to just get back to just straight serialized storytelling, like, these are cool monsters we're creating.
Yeah.
It's like we open with the hunters who are poaching deer out in the woods, drinking and driving.
Yeah.
And shooting deer. As you do.
Portland. As one does. Zach, as a white person, how do you feel about these negative depictions of white people?
These guys are assholes?
Great. Cool. Chat, how do you feel about negative depictions of white people?
I'm not sure how to respond to that. I mean, like, these guys were drinking and driving and shooting while under the influence.
Yeah.
Like, fundamentally, I don't have a problem with hunting.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I think that's why they had to, like, color up how bad these guys were.
Right.
With, like, the fact that they weren't just hunting. They were also drinking and driving. Mm-hmm. And, like, doing it at night, which is apparently illegal.
Right. Well, because, yeah, when you use the spotlight, you're essentially freezing the deer so you could shoot it. So you're kind of shooting fish in a barrel at that point.
Is that what it would be?
Yeah,
like, I guess so. That's what happens with headlights.
Yeah.
Where they just freeze up. But, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. But either, because, like, look, if you eat meat, you can, like, fundamentally, you can't really have a problem with hunting.
Right.
As long as you're not, like, just wasting, like, doing it for sport.
Right.
They get in a little trouble with the forest. Not the forest rangers, but the forest itself. Because what I can only describe as an angry Groot.
Yes.
Comes out of the woods.
People in the chat are referring to it as Groot's angry cousin.
Groot's angry cousin or Treebeard's, like, little brother. but yeah, no, it very much took some character. It reminded me of some of the more recent, like, character comic book versions of Groot, which is a little bit more intense than, like, the very soft version that we get in cinema. Not just baby, but even the adult Groot is, like, pretty like, soft features.
Yeah.
In the comics, he's very, like, he sometimes is very harsh and angry looking.
Right.
And then just saying, I am Groot. which is a great, like, thing. But, Groot reference number one, take a drink. Who says there's water in these cups? So it doesn't, they even ask, they're like, when they're trying to figure out what it is, like, does it have a human form or does it not?
Right.
And we were just talking about that. So I guess it is a Japanese creature.
Yes.
At least in terms of like where it's been found historically.
Yeah. So they both seem to be Japanese creatures, both the tree and the...
I think they're symbiote in a sense, right? And because we were just talking about Marvel, not right. that kind of symbiote.
Yes.
But in my mind, they were... Like the Kenosha Mobi is a just a facet of the
right the Jiboko
Jiboko tree.
I don't know. So you're saying that you feel like essentially the I don't know why I have a problem with the longer word, but the Kinshinobi.
Yep. Kenosha.
Kino Shinobi. Yep. That's what it is.
Sure.
The Kino Shinobi. The tree person. So you're saying that basically the main body is the Jiboko, and then the Kino Shimobe breaks off from there and does its dirty work. So they're essentially one being.
Sort of like the Hive Queen from Ender's Game.
Okay.
If anybody has read those books, like it's all one being. So yeah, breaks away from it. In it's completely psychically connected. It's like an arm that's just not connected to it, like physically.
Interesting.
Or it could be like bees to a hive, I guess. In a sense, I don't know.
I guess so. I had interpreted it as not them ever being like one and the same, but more as the way that those bottom feeder fish will eat the scum off of the bottoms of sharks and sharks won't eat them. I feel like it's the like they benefit one another in that like this is a handy place to store bad people, and then the tree guardian gets to do his duty. So like at some point they found one another, like this tree was just growing up and it was like, man, I'm hungry. And then the, Kino Shinome, was like, yo, I got some forest to guard. I need to store all these bodies I've been collecting. And they're like, hey, I have an idea. That's how I feel.
Interesting. I mean, it could be anything. Like that could your theory holds up. Like the logic's there. I think the logic's there for mine. They don't seem really settled on like figuring it out though.
Right.
I mean, I guess the interesting thing that they want us to think about here, and Monroe is the one who brings it up when they're fighting in the woods, is it even right to stop this thing? Like, yes, it killed people, but if you're treating the forest as an entity, and if this tree is intelligent, the way that like these Vessen spirits are intelligent, then each one of these people was doing the tree harm.
Right.
And and slowly killing it. And the tree, the Jiboko tree, was defending itself via the Kenosha Mobi.
Yes. Well, however, I guess that's like applying the law of the jungle to humans, though. Because, yes, in nature... you kill something that is a threat. Mm-hmm. Whereas these humans are part of our world, so we have laws and we require a trial and things of that sort, and like imprisonment. So essentially, yes, on the one hand, the law of nature says that the tree is right. Like, if it is threatened, it has the right to defend itself. But the law of man demands that like these people have a chance to like be redeemed. You know, and so I feel like you can't, it's apples and oranges, but at the same time, like, they are trying to enforce human law.
That's true. I mean, it's how do you apply the laws of man to the laws of nature?
Yes.
Answer me that, chat. or writers. I don't know.
Grumaniac says, symbiotic creatures sometimes develop from the very creature it has a symbiotic relationship with. So that's kind of in... conjunction with your theory.
Yeah. I like Amber says the Kenosha Moby was a seedling. Like, what if it's just a young Jacobo tree or Jiboku tree.
Yeah.
Jiboku tree. Should really write this down.
I really want to see which one of us gets our word correct. If I do the Kenosha Moby better first, or you do Jiboku better first. It's a race, bro. Get your linguistics together.
It's on,
But I like that idea, that essentially it's this endless cycle where at a certain point, a Kenosha Moby becomes a Jiboku and then creates a small... Like, that, to me, is probably the best way that I could think of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. We will never know unless the writers decide to tell us.
Yeah. Can you tweet at us, writers, and let us know who's right, what the laws are? Amber Betts says law of nature is greater than the law of man. So
I don't know. Man's done a lot of weird and bad stuff recently. All right. So, I mean, they eventually semi-stop it. Can I just say I was so happy that Nyx picked up the axe.
Yeah, he hasn't been an axe guy in a long time.
Like, come on. That's the Grimm's weapon. Like, whenever they go out to fight stuff and he doesn't take an axe with him, there's a little part of me that's disappointed.
Aww.
Especially when it's going to be a physical confrontation. Because, like, that's your thing, man. Like, I have a poster from season 2, like a print from Comic-Con, where, like, Nyx is just, like, there with an axe. And it looks badass.
No, it's great. And, like, that was what won the day at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Is that sweet, sweet axe.
Well, when you're fighting a tree...
Yes. So, can we talk about how the Kenosha Moby was defeated?
You mean like one blow to the chest?
Yes. I don't understand how that defeated it.
When a bullet wouldn't?
Right.
Well, I can only... An axe is very sharp. So it's cutting into it in a bigger portion.
Okay.
But yeah, if the axe could break it swung by Nyx, who is a Grimm, but like he's still not more powerful than a gun.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a chance that like, there's a chance that that axe is in some way like charmed or...
But
like,
we haven't established that, so I don't know that we can apply that.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe. I mean, and there's, at some point, I'm just spitballing here, Mr. Goku Jr. says, didn't the axe have runes on it? Runes being those sweet, sweet symbols. So it might be an elemental killing axe.
Maybe he'll need a rune-laden axe to fight the other symbol-bringing forces that are coming out of the tunnels.
Dim runes, girl. Also, Grimmaniac mentions that the name for Nyx's axe is Labrys.
Labrys.
Yeah. Labrys.
Thank you for spelling that out, because I would have just pronounced it. I would have been like Labrys, Labrys.
One could say swinging it is Labrys. Yep, that joke happened. Everyone, that joke happened. It's a good day.
We're done. there's some other. I mean, there's some fun moments in this, like in this episodic portion. Yeah. There was a moment where they're like. When they find, like, the toxic waste or whatever it was she was dumping, the woman who got killed.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're going to have to call the EPA. And I just went, good luck with that, bro.
Aww. Keep your politics out of my show.
It's not going to help. They're like, she's a private enterprise, and she has every right to go about her business as she sees fit while she dumps nuclear waste into the forest.
Gross.
And we got Sassy Wu.
Oh,
some
yeah.
More Sassy Wu, where they're like, Wu, can you do this? And in that moment, I went, why the hell has Wu not been promoted to detective yet? Like, we haven't asked that in a while. He's still a beat cop.
Well, his captain has been parading as the mayor for a long time. Like, no one's really paying attention to who's doing a good job. They have a really bad hierarchy of promotions there.
I just meant, like, even before, like, Renard, like, started going through all this, like through all the mayor stuff, especially before that, when he knew what Wu was doing.
Yeah.
You'd think he'd be like, you're a detective now, Sergeant Wu. I don't know. So I like that he got sassy about, like, he's like, yeah, I'll do that for you. Allow me to tell you where they went missing, because I did all the work.
I really liked the elements of policedom in this episode specifically. I feel like beyond the end where everyone shrugged their shoulders, like they really felt like a cop team at the very beginning and throughout this episode, where, you know, they're trying to calm the guy down. They're really like going through the motions of trying to figure out, like, if he is a crazy guy or if he was trying to murder his friend. Like, they were doing all of the, like, really intricate, nuanced detective stuff. Detective work. They were doing detective work. And not just being like, this is a Vesson. Let's go murder that Vesson. It's like they were really putting in the time, and I appreciated that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. I feel like that was a fun episode. Fun adventure.
Fun plot line. Yeah.
Yeah.
It took up the bulk of the episode.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of time spent on everything else. But we did get some bigger hints. Again, it's just like we're very slow crawling towards the March 24th.
Yes.
Penultimate episode with whatever events is coming. And Diana, and while they're talking about this, Diana just like wakes up and she's like, something bad is happening in the other place.
So now we basically have a mirror verse, or a mirror dimension, one might say.
Yeah.
One might say that. Marvel wouldn't be happy that you said it, but you could say it. I mean, I like that they're basically going, hey, this is not just in Juliet's head. It's like a real thing. And we know that Diana is somewhat connected to it, because she was able to like highlight all the she was able to see the symbols and all that stuff. So there's some like weird triangular connection between Nick and Juliet, or Eve and Diana. Yep, that's it.
Yeah. There is definitely something there. We don't know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
But the skull guy.
Yeah.
From the other side is, and the characters are getting on board with this, clearly going after Eve.
Mm-hmm.
Or following her. The question is, is it affected by Nick being there with her? What are the factors that, like, why are they going after Eve?
Right.
And what does that mean? Is it just because Eve has, like, seen the other side during the death grip thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah. It feels like, based on the players in this game, it feels like, especially it being Nick and Juliet or Eve, Juliet. The two people who had the most contact with the stick, I would say it has to be connected to that in some way. And it has to be either that, or it has to be connected to the fact that, like, yes, she's Eve. I keep struggling to call her Eve. Eve has seen the other side and was essentially, like, cured by the stick. So maybe that combination makes her a beacon for the other side.
That sounds right. I mean, that sounds like it could be right. There's a lot of factors here that, like, I'm not sure how to absorb. Like the bleeding mirror.
Yes.
What do you think that means or is from? Is that hell bleeding? Like, whose blood is that, is my question.
Well, it's a combination of the hand's blood and Juliet's blood, if I remember correctly. Because she was bleeding, and then she bit the hand, and its blood kind of washed onto the mirror as well, and they both just kind of congealed. So I don't know why it started bleeding at that moment. Maybe it was the creature trying to come back through.
Yeah.
Because it was essentially obstructing his portal.
Yeah, I mean, if the creature exists as part of the Mirrorverse, like more like built into it,
yeah,
then cutting it, like breaking the mirror, may have is like now it's bleeding via this one portal,
right?
And it's just like an open wound that needs to heal, kind of thing.
Interesting.
I don't know. It's interesting, and it's interesting that Diana has like her psychic abilities are like telling her something about this.
Yeah.
And she senses that something bad is going to happen, but it's going to be, it's like, so she thinks it's in the other place, right?
Yeah.
If it's happening over there, I guess the question is, how is it going to affect our world?
Right. Really quick, Lydia Cebreros says that it's carnage! So it's got to be carnage on the other side. we've got symbiotes, we've got blood monsters.
Yeah.
Bro.
Might as well. I did like it, that I like Monroe's reactions to all of this. Like, as it gets darker, Monroe gets, like, sillier.
Uh-huh.
Buddy system for the mirror. No one looks in a mirror alone anymore.
That was a really cute bit between Adeline and Nick.
Yeah.
Where he's, like, going to go shave, and she's like, I think you look better with the stubble, right?
Yeah, all right, that's great. Yeah, stubble it is. Yeah. Or just, like, you know, if you're shaving the whole thing, I feel like you could do that by feel.
Right.
It's more like with guys like us, like when we have a beard and we need to clean it up. Uh-huh. That's when it's hard.
Yeah.
They could just play the mirror game. Natalie could just stare at each other and she's like, oh no, you missed the spot. Okay. All right. Did I get it? Yeah. Okay. All right. See it work.
I do feel like this was a missed opportunity to like really kind of placate the Natalie fans, to have like a really adorable shaving scene between them
where shaves him,
yeah. Where she's just like, oh, and he's like, oh, you cut me, and she's like, oh, don't worry, I'll take care of it. She grabs the stick and then heals him.
Now I want to know, chat, do you want to see that shaving scene?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine...
And should Yell and Tari reenact it for you?
Yeah, we could totally do that. I'll shave Yell any day.
Well played.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it would have a different dynamic than most shaving scenes, because most of the time it's about someone of power dominating someone of lower power, like you'll see in, like you've seen in, like, what is that show? Luke Cage and Westworld and blah, whatever.
Yeah.
So it'll be different. It'll be romantic. It'll be like the pottery scene, but with a face.
It's got weird. It's got real weird.
Ah, yeah. You're not the only one who can get weird, Zach.
The only other big plot was Bernard.
Yeah.
Like, by big, I mean existed. Like, he calls that woman again. Who's like gonna say, I'm gonna speak English. I'm trying to practice. And so the symbols, as she interpreted this, she's recognized some of them, and some of them are completely unknown.
Yeah.
And like, I think that this woman is supposed to be like very well versed in all this ancient lore kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's the language of the underworld, as sort of what it's implying.
Yeah.
That means that the cloth,
mm-hmm.
So the cloth and the stick are now tied to this underworld,
right?
In some way. So what is that? How does that affect our theories on what like the stick is and why it's like? Because again, like the stick was locked up, but it was made accessible. So the Grimms that locked it up had to think that there might be a reason that it was needed in the future.
I guess so. I mean, I feel like we've known that it's in some way tied to the afterlife or some like otherworldly being or creature or power. We've at one point theorized that its power does directly come from the other side or the underworld or something to that effect. So, like, I feel like it just kind of adds on a layer. It doesn't necessarily, like, change anything.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. that's how I feel.
That's more... I'm more or less on the same page. Chat, let us know. I would love to know, like, more of, like, what the chat, like, what you guys are thinking. Because we've been sort of, like, we've had so... This wasn't really a lot of new information.
Yeah.
This episode in terms of, like, what's going on with the overarching plot line. Yeah. So I would love to know, like, so my theories haven't changed,
mm-hmm.
is what I'm saying. I still have more or less the same insane theories
right.
about how Vessin Everywhere will be affected or not affected, or humans will be affected or not affected by whatever the event is coming on March 24th.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? Let us know, because I want to see what ideas we could bounce off while we have some time left.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and just kind of not elaborate, but like piggyback off of that.
Yeah.
I think though we didn't get a lot of information, it was a good way of getting everyone kind of on the same page in that Diana didn't know that it was a map leading to a future date. But she basically was like, something's going to happen, and I can feel it. And so now she is also kind of on the same page that, like, everything that they are trying... Like, the thing that is coming up is connected to what they think is going to happen. I don't think the team has really put it together yet. And for not to jump ahead too far, but, like, from what it seems, like, the next episode we're going to get... Like, kind of, somewhat, some form of answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be. Could be. What does the chat have to say? Tari, any cool theories coming out?
Right now, they're mostly talking about the tree. And how, basically how, what the construction of it was. Grimaniac says, based on pictures that Sean Faulkner uploaded from the set, he's the season 6 art director, they built the tree themselves, so it's a practical effect, which is really interesting and cool. That's mostly what's happening right now in the chat.
All right, well, while we're there, why don't we give some shout-outs to people who have left us reviews on iTunes recently? Because we love when you guys do it. We haven't been able to give as much shout outs because we've been like engrossed in the episodes recently. I have the reviews up. Don't worry.
Great.
But yeah, I want to thank Hey Mayday 8, who said, I listened to a few other podcasts during the week, some of which have had hosts in common with this one. But this is by far my favorite. The humor is great and the insight is amazing. And I love how well you all work together. You each bring something different to the podcast. Great job, Zach, Tari, and Yell.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Prodigal358. Thank you, Nerdity Nerd Nerd. Thank you. And this is from a few weeks ago, uh-huh. but seems appropriate. Thank you, Mrs. Groot.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that was it.
I mean, we don't need to read all of them, but I wanted to thank all of you guys for writing reviews. And if you want a shout out on the show, be sure to send us a review on iTunes, because it does help other people find the show. It helps raise the profile of this and the entire network, so it is a big help. So thank you guys for this.
Yes, indeed. All right, I have a couple things from the chat.
Awesome.
Jay of Venga says, maybe all Vessin are going to die or attack the human race. Which is interesting. The Sister Grimm says maybe a portal opens every 500 years or so and turns more humans into Vessin.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Like it multiplies Vessin out there.
Right.
That would be my Vessin origins I've been waiting on.
It's true. And it would be very much in line with what they were kind of hinting at, that like Vessin come from the sky, or they come from like the stars, which essentially could mean that the energy or the magic that creates Vessin essentially shoots down into people. It, like when the portal opens, it shoots down and then ingrains itself with a certain amount of people in humanity, which would be really cool.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Should we officially go into predictions mode at this point? Since we haven't officially done it, even though we've been predicting per the usual for a while.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
All right, so I didn't get a chance to watch the preview, but I read about what next week, like the synopsis for next week's episode, and it sounds like the big thing is going to be Renard is going to confront Nick about Diana and the symbols, which that's a big moment for them.
Yeah,
since they're basically in this like we saw him like walk behind them, like, I don't care what you guys are doing, I don't want to talk to you.
Oh, yeah, a lover's quarrel. Joanna Bush had a very similar theory. She says that her theory is that Sean confronts Nick, Sean's Siberian friend visits, Sean calls his mom for help to protect Diana. Boom!
Yeah. I would love to see Mama Renard back. She's alive, right? Pretty sure.
Yeah, she's alive and still hot.
She's the only mom still alive. Everybody else's mom died.
I would love to have her back. Not just because I find her very attractive, but because she was very powerful and had and seemed to know just a bunch of stuff. So, like, if they're dealing with otherworldly figures, it would be great to have someone who is probably one of the strongest Hex and Beasts out there, and, two, who could give you some insight on what's happening. It'd be like, you know, traveling around with someone who always rolls 20 on Arcana. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying.
I do know what you're saying. But it would, I mean, it's, she would be good. Like, she's the right person to have. Like, in terms of bringing up Diana, I, like, can't imagine that there would be someone necessarily better to, like, have. Other than, since we don't have Mama Grimm around anymore.
Yeah.
It's too bad. It's too bad, like, Mama Grimm, like, her first, like, motherly figure that she would remember, like, couldn't still be teaching her.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if Kelly had had the chance to really raise her further, she would have, like, been much more well-adjusted.
Yeah. Ooh, man. When is that going to come to light? When is someone going to tell Diana that Juliet killed Kelly?
Or just tell her that that is Nick's mom.
Yeah, you know.
That little detail, like, you want, like, maybe you want to, like, I don't know, bond with your like, girlfriend's kid a little bit. Your baby mama's other kid. Explain that the woman who was raising her for the first, like, however many months or years of her life is your mom.
Yeah.
Connection. Right there. But yeah. I'm excited for next week's episode. Only 4 episodes left, you guys.
Yes.
4 episodes left for Grimm. And I think we're finally going to pick up pace towards, like, whatever we're going to close the season out.
Yeah, but I'd agree. I had one last prediction from Amanda Lurch.
Do it.
That Eve sacrifices herself in the mirror world to bring back Nick's mother and Meisner. Hashtag paying it forward.
I'm sorry, y'all. Meisner's gone.
No, he's just
he's in gone he's, like 8 times.
He's in
now.
The mirror world. I mean, that also. I don't know if it mentioned in your synopsis, but Juliet does go into the mirror world in the preview.
Oh boy!
So she smears her blood across the mirror, and then you see her putting her hand through the mirror. So it seems like, and you see kind of an almost most body, like a frame of most body shot of the skull guy.
Nice.
So, I mean, we're gonna get some answers, or something weird's gonna happen.
My money's on something weird. all right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for the Grimm After Show here at AfterBuzz TV. Thank you so much for joining us. I've been your host, Zach Wilson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson. Also, be sure to check out my weekly show on our sister channel, The Popcorn Talk. This week, we reviewed Logan and talked about how much we got emotional while watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I cried. That's also why I'm wearing, like, an undershirt under here. I'm not just, like, randomly doing it. It's because it was time to talk Logan.
Totally.
And that's what you wear when you talk about Logan.
That's true.
But we had a lot of fun with me, Jesse Klein, and Markia McCarty of Marvel Movie News getting into it and talking all about it. So check that out.
And I'm Tari J. Miller. You can find me at Tari J. It's T-A-U-R-I-J-A-Y. You can also find me here on AfterBuzz TV on the ABTV DCCW slate. That's Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, sometimes on the Legends of Tomorrow. Who knows next time? So make sure to tune in and catch me there.
All right, guys. This has been the Grim After Show. Thanks for geeking out with us.
Bye. Thanks for geeking out.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.